Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike. Go on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how you doing, brother? Uh-oh, Stephen, I think you muted yourself.
We're off to a great start. It's Monday, aren't we?
How you doing?
Hey! I was trying to say that I have the college football blues right now, and I hit the wrong button, so I guess that sums up the way to start this week, right?
Yeah, you got off to a great start. I'm trying to think. Who else got off to a great... You're like the Brian Kelly of this podcast. You may start 0-1, but you're going to get borderline playoff by the end of it. How's that?
We're going to get stronger as the episode goes along. I can assure you that we will not be hitting the wrong button again. But, man, I tell you, we've had a few weeks without the Super Bowl. NFL season ended. College football, I've resorted to checking out the YouTube for some old games, watching something last year. So I don't know, man. I got the college football blues right now. How about you?
Oh, no, I don't, Stephen, because we got Cousin JR's back again with another membership. We may not know how to properly run a show, Stephen, but we know what we do know is that we got a legend JR in the comments. So we appreciate you, JR. He donated to Brenton, welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend, JR. So as long as JR's here, I think we're doing something right. You know what?
At least one of us can operate some technology tonight, right? JR.
Did you watch, I forgot to even ask you this, Stephen and I, just for a little transparency, we jump on prior and we talk about what we're going to talk about. But did you watch any of the combine stuff? Because normally I don't watch any of that. I went over, I was hanging out with my uncle. He's an NFL addict. I watched about 30 minutes. It's about all I could watch of that. Did you catch any of the combine?
I didn't really get a chance to catch any of the visuals. I was trying to follow from afar, like online, just seeing some of the things, like Jalen Milroe's hand size got bigger, which is always funny to me because it happened to like Kenny Pickett a few years ago at Pittsburgh. But did you have any takeaways from the combine? Anything you saw?
Mainly, how do people watch this for entertainment? I don't understand it. There's people in the stands, which I knew before, but that is just like baffling to me. I understand it for purposes for doing the draft. You want to have the video footage, but I cannot, as much as I love football, I cannot understand anybody that watches a second of that. I really can't.
Well, especially now, too, because a lot of the top players are opting to not work out there. I mean, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders and others didn't, opt to work out, just do interviews. So it's interesting because I guess it's an extension of the draft. And I guess if you like college and the NFL, you're probably like me, you're a draft nerd. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to watch now, isn't it?
It is. I'm right here with Jeez Louise. The only combine worth a D is John Deere. Come on. That's where I'm at right there. So let's not waste people's time with any more combine garbage. But so Stephen came up with some great ideas here. We're going to tackle on the show. We're going to do an early SEC, all SEC team predictions. So Stephen's got his. We're going to tear that apart. And then I'm going to show you the real one. I got my own. The biggest unknowns entering spring football. That part was my idea and kind of the logic behind it, Stephen, and just for all the cousins so they understand. These are teams that, like, if you made me bet the mortgage on how this team's going to do, I ain't doing it. I refuse. There's five teams that I refuse to do it, and maybe exiting spring, I'll have a lot better idea about the five teams in specific. And then Stephen also wanted to do they're doing North Carolina Hard Knocks. Apparently they couldn't get a single NFL team to agree to do the Hard Knocks this year. And so they're doing college football. They're doing North Carolina, if you haven't seen it. And I didn't realize this either, Stephen, but two of Bill Belichick's sons are on the coaching staff, and Mike Lombardi, the GM, his son is on the coaching staff as well. I think these guys just took the damn job so that their sons can get into the coaching world or something. But so we're going to pick a couple of teams that if they did SEC Hard Knocks, who that should be. Anything else, Stephen? Did I leave anything else out?
Mike, I think you covered it all, but for an off-season show, we are jam-packed with topics tonight, right? Also, spring practice kicking up. I saw some footage from Alabama, Ty Simpson and Keelan Russell tossing the pigskin around. It was good to see some Missouri chatter this weekend after they started up spring practice. So, man, I know I said at the beginning, I'm missing college football, but all these spring practice updates are starting to get me a little bit ready for the, of course, the Athlon Sports Magazine and the upcoming season, too.
Yeah, and speaking of spring, again, thoughts and prayers to all of us addicts, because it doesn't sound like there's going to be a single spring game televised, but, you know, here in a couple of months, hopefully that's not the case, but more people are pulling out. Like, oh, man, there's so many things went in my head when I said that. I don't want to go in that direction, but there's so many people pulling out of spring games that it's going to be tough to watch. So I don't even want to think about that. I may cry here, Steven.
Who's going to be the hero that uploads like all 22 or spring game footage with ones on ones to YouTube or where? I know they're out there, right?
Please tag me in any videos you see of spring games, because it doesn't sound like we're going to get many of them. So let's dive into it, Stephen. Like you said, we got a lot to get into. Oh, one other item here. Clark Lee. How about this, Stephen? Not calling defensive plays. He's not going to be the defensive coordinator after he wasn't the first 3 years. It was a disaster, of course. He starts calling the plays. I mean, that's not the sole reason. I think that's Diego Pavia. I think it's the New Mexico State influx, of course. But last year, if you didn't know, Clark Lee called the defense, and he's not doing it this year. He's handing it back off to an assistant. Thoughts on this, Stephen? And I believe this was former, I don't know the guy's name, Miami defensive backs coach in the NFL, I believe, is who their new defensive coordinator is. What's your thoughts on this decision?
I think it's probably a smart decision by Clark Lee, largely because it feels like the program is on the right track. You know, coming into last season, it felt like a make or break year. Now it feels like, hey, the program's on pretty stable footing. You just won 7 games. Looking ahead to this year, pretty good core coming back on defense. It's sort of, with everything going on that a head coach has to navigate, now that things have stabilized, it's probably a good thing for Clark Lee to sort of remove him and from the defensive room and allow him to be more of a head coach. Just want to note his impact on that defense last year, 36 points a game allowed in 2023, down to 23.4 last year. So he made a massive impact by taking over the play calling duties. And Steve Gregory is going to take over as DC. I think they worked back at Syracuse together, but also Bob Shoup coming back too. He was really, really good at Vanderbilt. He's kind of bounced around since then. He was there under James Franklin. So they sort of bolstered their defensive staff with Bob Shoup. But also when you have guys like Jerry Kill on staff as well, you got a lot of really smart people there at Vanderbilt on that staff. So I think given what happened last year, it's a smart move for Clark Lee.
Yeah, let's hope so, Steven, because otherwise in a year from now, we're going to be like, man, can you believe Clark Lee took back the play call of duties to fix what they screwed up? But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, there's some great defensive minds in this conference, there's some great offensive minds, but it seems like it's just so difficult to manage that. And I read an article, I think it was Joe Rex Road from The Athletic this morning. Clark Lee admitted, like, it was, he couldn't dedicate full responsibilities. I mean, how could you, obviously, to being a head coach? So that was kind of the reason for doing this. And even late last year, he said he kind of handed over a lot of, he was only doing, I think he said, third down and red zone calls because it was just too overwhelming. And you know, that is a terrible position to be in. And again, I don't know if this has any validity to it, Stephen, but, when Texas lost in the playoff, I wish I could remember it because I cite this all the time. I wish I could remember who tweeted it out, but apparently no college football team has won the national championship in a playoff or BCS era with an offensive coordinator, a head coach that was calling plays, if that makes sense. So there's got to be something to that, to where you're just shouldering too much responsibilities on game days.
Also, with the House settlement upcoming, potential roster tweaks. You know, we saw Oklahoma hire Jim Nagy, which is a really good hire. Like, all these programs are staffing up, but also as a head coach, it's no longer just about X's and O's and managing this depth chart and stuff. You got a lot on your plate. So if you can find other guys to take that off and sort of free you up to be a head coach, which in theory should help your program move forward, it makes sense for Clark Lea. Then again, I guess the other thing with this too, Mike, is if the defense does struggle, you have a built-in defensive coordinator. So it's the timing feels right for Clark Lea.
Yeah. All right, Steven. So let's get into SEC Hard Knocks. How many teams did you do? Did you rank them? And what made you want to discuss this aside from Belichick hired all his boys down there?
Yeah, Mike, I thought it was really interesting that the NFL couldn't find another team. And I guess some of that goes back to the Giants last year and the whole debacle with Saquon Barkley and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that was showed. But it also got me thinking, you know, Netflix is doing, you know, the thing with the SEC teams and following them during the season. But also, I would just love a Hard Knocks SEC. Everything is on the table. There's nothing that's cut out. We have full access. And I just thought, hey, you know, they're doing North Carolina. That's pretty interesting. Bill Belichick is. Why not the SEC? I mean, this is the best conference in college football with so many storylines. We can find a team better than North Carolina, right?
I would certainly hope so. now maybe we'll get a little bit of this. I know it's not quite the same, but Netflix doing that SEC show this summer. So, but again, they chronicled last season. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I think South Carolina did do something similar like this a couple of years ago, and it was very well received. I wish they did it every year.
I do too. You know, I kind of talked myself when I was doing this list almost like something I could be interested in for every SEC team. So it was a problem to try to get the list down. I got to five. Then I said, I got to throw these other two in there. So I ended up with seven. But if you asked me to come up with a reason for all 16, I could definitely do it.
Okay. Well, I ranked mine 1 through 5 with number one being, you know, the one I want the most. Who is your number one SEC Hard Knocks team you want to see featured on the show?
I've got LSU, Mike.
Ooh.
Couple reasons why. I think as you and I have talked, I think the consensus this preseason is going to be Texas and Georgia are going to be the favorites in the SEC by most. I think LSU's kind of settled into there as that next team, subject to people pick differently. But I'd say that's the consensus going into spring. Garrett Nussmeier's back, star quarterback. That's always a great storyline. Also, a defense that should be better. Harold Perkins is back. Brian Kelly, must-see television probably to see how many shades of red he can turn if the defense doesn't progress this offseason. I just think there's a ton of interest here in what's kind of a huge season for LSU.
Yeah, that's not a bad selection. Wasn't even in my top three, though, Stephen. How about that? I had LSU number four. I think, you know, and having a veteran quarterback, certainly I think that helps, you know, because when you watch Hard Knocks, they like to center on, you know, star players and then also the board that, you know, the more I talk about this, Stephen, the more fun this could be. If, you know, you have your elite prospects and then you have your incoming freshmen, because that's kind of how the show is. They do a lot of the undrafted rookies that are going to be cut here in a couple weeks. I know it's a little bit different for college, but this could be a lot of fun. But yeah, LSU signed me up for that, but not my number one. Lane Whiffen, come on, Dad, Ole Miss. How could you, you know, Hard Knocks, Lane Kiffin, that goes hand in hand. I'm surprised I didn't come up with this idea before old Bill Belichick did. I think Lane Kiffin being on the show would be interesting, and just the massive amount of turnover that they've had. Again, they're dead last in offensive and defensive returning production this season in the SEC, so there's a lot of new faces. I know there's a lot of hope that Austin Simmons will be that next great Lane Kiffin quarterback, and he may very well be, but this is an opportunity for the rest of the country to get to know Austin Simmons, I feel like. So give me Ole Miss. Give me and Pete Golding's a wild man himself, so I'm throwing him in there too. He's had fun on and off the field, if you know what I mean. So there's a collection of characters down there in Oxford. That's my number one.
Great call, Mike. I had them five on my list. I felt like there was, like I said, seven that were pretty close, but you said it best there. I mean, Kiffin, Austin Simmons, Pete Golding, a ton of new faces. This would be a great chance to introduce all their transfers and to kind of get to know this 2025 Ole Miss team. So great call on Ole Miss.
But so who is your number? Where are we at? Number? Did you do your number one?
I did LSU at one.
LSU one, right. Number. Who's your number two then?
Bit of a surprise. Vanderbilt.
Oh,
give me Diego Pavia. I don't know. Forget about the rest of the team. Just give me Diego Pavia.
Just a camera following Diego 24/7. And what about his crazy brothers? Can't forget them.
Exactly, Mike. That's just it. It just needs a Diego Pavia Hard Knocks from start to finish. He is just such one of the best personalities in college football. Changed the outlook for Vanderbilt last year, and obviously a big reason why I think they got a good chance to surprise again. But also, I started to put this list together, and I had Vanderbilt lower, but I thought this would be a great opportunity for Vanderbilt to get exposure, to sell the program. Some of these other programs could be scared because they don't want to give away secrets. Well, if you're Clark Lee and Vanderbilt, you're trying to grow this program, what better way than to invite the cameras of Hard Knocks in with a quarterback like Pavia?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Steven. Vanderbilt didn't even make my list, but I certainly considered them because I only did the top five. But yeah, there's a lot of reasons that is an outstanding choice, starting with Diego Pavia, of course. But number two, I'm going Georgia. Come on down, Kirby Smart. Maybe the best coach in the game right now, and certainly the gold standard in the SEC for the time being. So I would love a peek behind the curtain because Kirby's never going to give us that, obviously, but I would love it and just see, you know, I've heard some stories, Stephen, about how physical and tough and how wild it gets down there at practice down in Athens. Give me Georgia. Georgia might be really the number one, but they just don't quite. I feel like Kirby would not show his personality. Like we played it last week. I don't know if you saw it, Stephen, where he's calling Johnny Manziel champion a fireball or whatever. Like, if we get that Kirby, make him number one. But if Kirby ever had to do a Hard Knock, he'd probably quit the next day, to be honest with you. But if they ever made him do a Hard Knocks, and he would not show his personality. So I can't put Georgia number one for that.
That's exactly why I left Georgia off my list. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're telling me we're getting full access, we're getting full kind of crazy mode, Kirby Smart and the Georgia staff, they would be high on my list. My guess is if Georgia had to do this, we probably would see a little different version of Kirby Smart. We wouldn't be getting the leaked halftime speech Kirby and some of the things that we say in spring practice.
So who's your number three?
Oklahoma. I think this is one of the most interesting teams in college football for this year. Just so much intrigue. I mean, I love this defense. I think their defense is going to be one of the better groups in the SEC, but you've got so many questions. And now you've got this new OC and quarterback combo. They've worked together. I would love to see some behind the scenes, you know, installation of the offense. Also, Brent Venables working with the defense, also his coaching future, very much on the line this year. And mention Jim Nagy, all the new personnel they've hired off the field. There's still the whole SEC transition, getting comfortable with the league. So I think Oklahoma has a ton of storylines that are really interesting this year.
Hey, shout out Moosehead. Excellent comment. Two fired Oklahoma OCs are now at Tennessee with Seth Luttrell joining the staff. And wonder who that other one is. Oh, we know Josh Heupel, just the greatest coach in Tennessee modern history. But he was a fired offensive coordinator for sure.
You sounded excited about the Seth Luttrell pickup there.
I think that's a good pick. I really do. People think I'm nuts, but was he the problem? I mean, he may very well have been. But they ran the quarterback off last I checked, and the offensive, again, we don't have to rehash how awful Oklahoma was, but I don't know who to blame for that one, Steve. If you told me 5 years from now Seth Luttrell's the best play caller in the SEC, I mean, I frankly wouldn't buy that, but that it wouldn't stun me. If you told me Jackson Arnold in 2 years is the best quarterback in the SEC, it wouldn't stun me. You know what I mean? Or if both those guys are the worst at their respective positions, It wouldn't surprise me either. I don't know what to make of anybody from Oklahoma last year on the offensive side of the football.
I think it's actually a really solid pickup for Tennessee, just because I think it's good to have smart people who know your system and have coached in this league on your staff. You know, you can have a million analysts and, you know, people who are, you know, in coaching interns or whatever, but Seth Luttrell's been a head coach. He's been a coordinator. To me, smart people are hard to not add to your organization. So I think it's great for Tennessee.
They are. All right. My number three. How about this one, Steven? South Carolina. And I would, two factors here were huge for me. Shane Beamer and his, I love the guy. I think, passion is that's why we love college football, right? And he's passionate. He'll kick a Gatorade thing, I think it was, and break his foot. He'll go crazy in a post game, win or lose. You know, he's like the players, man. He's riding that wave. And if you like Carolina, I think you love the guy. If you hate Carolina, I think you hate the guy. That's what I want from my coaches. You know, that was the same thing with Spurrier, you know, when he was at Carolina and obviously at Florida. So his personality be on display, but more importantly, Lenora Sellers may be the biggest star in the country next year. So give us a window into that. If he's not, maybe his teammate is Dylan Stewart. I want an up close and personal look at that. I think there's a lot to like about the Gamecocks heading into the season, and I think camera crew there would be excellent.
I totally agree on Shane Beamer. Like, being able to follow him around in the off season, during practice, leading up to the season. Perhaps if we had this during the season, it would have been nice to see his reaction in the Sunglasses Bowl. It would have been nice to see his reaction after the Brett Bielema incident in the bowl game. So potentially some great stuff behind the scenes, but you mentioned it, the personalities, the star quarterback, the star freshman defender that's soon to be a sophomore. I had South Carolina at six in these rankings, but that feels a little low. But then again, all these teams have really good storylines too.
Mm-hmm. So who is your number four? This is where I had LSU.
I've got Auburn. Oh. I think I'm surprised you didn't have the number one, but Hugh Freeze, Jackson Arnold, Cam Coleman, make or break season. To me, Auburn is going to be must-see television every week in the SEC because of the volatility. They could lose to California like they did last year. They could turn around and beat Alabama. You know, that's the kind of season they had last year, and I suspect they will be very much up and down again this year. But so much intrigue with coaching and quarterback that they'd make it easy, hard knocks.
Yeah, no, I could get on board with that, but I think everybody knows how I feel about that situation. So I am going to do my last one here. I'm going number five. I would love to see Arkansas. How about that wild card, Steven? Sam Pittman, you know, what a character he is. And Bobby Petrino. we all know that background there. And then, again, having a star, potentially, Talen Green. I think there's a lot to like about Arkansas. And these are the teams usually they focus on where – they usually pick a team, and I think it's the way the NFL, when they were able to get teams to actually do this, it was teams that missed the playoffs and things of that nature. So I think it was usually teams with low expectations, and then you get this camera crew, and they're following them week after week, and you start rooting for them, and you're like, man, maybe these guys can be great. You know, this guy's good. That guy's good. That guy's got a personality, and you start rooting for them. I think someone like the Arkansas Razorbacks, I think a show like this could do wonders for their program.
I love that call, because I think not only is it good exposure for Arkansas, but Sam Pittman, a very likable head coach. I think no matter, you know, other teams in the country, when you watch Sam Pittman, he becomes very easy to root for. Also, like you said, there's the whole Petrino storyline, a star quarterback, but also the new faces. I mean, they're, you know, you look at their returning production on offense and defense, they've got a lot of holes to fill. So this would be a good opportunity for Arkansas to sort of elevate the profile of Talen Green, and also at the same time, give us a good look at some of the new faces, because they have a very large transfer class coming in, kind of be a good first look at this team.
Yep. So, all right. So who is your, well, you've got seven. So who's left on your list?
I've got Ole Miss at five. You know, just new faces, Kiffin, Austin Simmons. I've got South Carolina at six, you know, kind of for a lot of what you mentioned. Just anytime we can get the star quarterback in something like this, Shane Beamer fits this kind of show, I think, perfectly. I had Alabama at seven. You know, it's Alabama, Kalen DeBoer, Brian Grubb, quarterback battle, second year. Like, what's different this year behind the scenes compared to last year? So as always, no shortage of great storylines here for some of these teams.
I will sign off on that if we're allowed to call it high tide.
Yeah.
How about that? Yeah. High tide.
Good. All right. High tide, hard knocks.
All right. So let's jump into biggest unknowns here in just a second. But I gotta remind the folks, hey, this week, Stephen, we are brought to you by Public Rec. Outstanding gear over at publicrec.com. Head on over there, put in that promo code SEC for 20% off your full order over at Public Rec. And you're saying, what is this Public Rec? Steven, I don't know about where you live, but where I live, it was getting warm. Now it seems to be chilly again. Public Rec could serve you well because they sell outstanding clothes, long sleeve shirts, and pants. I love the pants, Steven. They sent me a pair of Public Rec pants. I liked them so much, I spent my own money to order another pair. I got the green and the dark blue. This is a great thing about Public Rec. It's not just small, medium, large, or whatever size you are. You give them specific specifications to your length and your waist, and they'll send you clothes that you will personally love. We love them over here. PublicRec.com. Most importantly, don't forget that promo code SEC at the checkout to get 20% off. Steven is a huge fan of long sleeve t-shirts. We need to send him some Public Rec.
It's funny you did the Public Rec ad right after we talked about the one coach who needs an updated wardrobe for the season, and Kalen DeBoer, after what happened last season at the Vanderbilt, the criticism of the wardrobe. So I think we need to get Hard Knocks to follow Kalen DeBoer, logging into Public Rec, checking out some new clothes. I'm a big fan, Mike. I was doing some shopping over on Public Rec, eyeing a few things here recently. So I'm going to be using that promo code.
So biggest unknowns entering spring. And again, we could speak endlessly about, players or position groups or anything like that, but I'm trying to narrow this down to the teams that I want to learn about this spring just to have a better understanding. And we have talked about a lot of these teams already, Stephen, but who is the number one team that is kind of the biggest unknown for you in the SEC entering spring football?
I think Ole Miss would top my list. I think when you just look at what they lost from last year, under 50% returning production on both sides of the ball, the large class of transfers, and there's also the recent success. I mean, this program has been elevated under Lane Kiffin, ton of optimism about Austin Simmons, but all of the new faces and some really big-time players like a Walter Nolan, some other guys on defense, departing, Trey Harris as well, a receiver. So I just think that with just the small amount of production and returning starters, they only have four returning. To me, they are a complete unknown, but there's also a ton of upside too.
Yeah, I like that one, Steven. I put them at number three in my list for all the reasons you said. I think at this point in time, all the success Lane Kiffin has had, I'll throw this back up. Again, they are the third winningest program in the conference since 2021. That needs to be said as many times as we can say it, because they've really got things rolling there, obviously, down in Oxford. So they get the benefit of the doubt. But this is a team, Stephen, that I'm really, after I did that returning production, which is not the end-all be-all by any means, but I think I may have been a little too high on them. And I wonder if most people, just because, again, your third winningest program the last 4 years in the conference, expectations are raised. You know, it's playoff or bust. And I don't mind that mentality, but I don't know how realistic that is. Now, it is realistic if you look at the schedule, because, again, that doesn't, hell, they were favored like last year in every game but Georgia, I think. And heck, they managed to beat Georgia. So the schedule says otherwise. I'm not saying this isn't a playoff team, but I think I'll be able to make that determination exiting spring. Like you said, that's a good choice by you, number one. I still got it number three, though.
It's just an interesting team because of the schedule almost could overcome the returning personnel, if that makes sense. Just because I think you start looking at predictions, I think people will be enticed by that favorable schedule. And you think, well, if the quarterback hits, it can overcome a lot. But, you know, their offensive line struggled last year at times. Lose only, you know, basically what one returning starter up there too. A lot of key players gone on defense, but also at the back of my mind, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt because I kind of trust Lane Kiffin and Pete Golding. So I would, at the end of spring, we'll have a much better idea of like how the next wave of Ole Miss players coming through, I think, looks.
Mm-hmm. My number one in this category, biggest unknown. I'm going to throw up their schedule here. Give me, Steve. We hit on this team already. Oklahoma, come on down with a new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, new quarterback coach, new receiving core, new everything's new, at least on one side of the football. So this is going to be a wild scene. They open spring, I believe, today. So we're going to have a lot of news and notes coming out of Norman here in the next couple of weeks. But this is the number one team, Stephen, where I'm kind of buying in. But I'm kind of saying the coach could get fired. I mean, it's like one or the other. Like, I don't think there's going to be any other in between. I think it's going to be an epic disaster, or they could be the biggest surprise in the conference.
That schedule is so brutal. I mean, I'm on board with you about Oklahoma here because I had them second on my list. And it's a lot of the same reasons you mentioned, the quarterback OC combo, Mateer and Arbuckle. Whether it is to be 100% believed, I think what the players and coaches are saying exiting spring, what exactly does this offense look like? Maybe in some of the scrimmages will give us a good idea. But also below that, there should be some optimism because surely their receivers and offensive line cannot be as injured or as playing as poorly as they did last season. So this to me is all about offensive progression and what do we hear exiting spring.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, sticking on a similar theme on the offensive side of the football, how about my number two? You said Oklahoma's your number two. I'll go with Missouri, which is got both coordinators coming back, which is big, but a lot of new faces on the offensive side of the football with Brady Cook, Luther Burden, Theo Weiss. Both the running backs from last year, all of those guys off to the NFL. They raided the transfer portal. So I'm not sitting here saying they're going to be bad or anything, but I want to see early reports how this is all coming together. And according to Coach Drink, we'll highlight a little bit more of this on the next episode with Shane, but it sounds like Sam Horn is full go 100%. So, you know, maybe it's not the Bo show like we thought it was. I don't know. I think if you pay a guy $1.5 million, you expect him to play. So, you know, a lot could change for Missouri this spring, and they're kind of arguably the biggest wild card in the conference.
Yeah, I think the Bo Prabula storyline is interesting in itself, like how he progresses to be the full-time starter after sort of being a change of pace player at Penn State is fascinating on its own. You know, you look at their defensive production, they bring back a ton, but there's a ton of question marks on the offensive side. And I love some of those transfers. I mean, Ahmad Hardy, the transfer from Louisiana Monroe, I think is going to make a big time impact at running back. But this is a team that I am very eager to get the buzz kind of coming out of spring because of that schedule. I mean, just it is so favorable to Missouri that they have a chance to be like I said, they have a chance to be like an Indiana type run here. If the pieces fall into place, they could hit right and be in the mix to make the college football playoff. But also I think the quarterback situation is not only interesting because of Prabula's is development, but you start talking about the depth that all of a sudden they have with Drew Pine and Sam Horn and the freshman coming in, what was a very thin depth chart last year, all of a sudden looks a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's, I think Missouri ranks pretty high on this list, certainly for me. Who is your number three?
I went with Auburn. And, you know, we kind of mentioned some of the reasoning earlier, Mike. You know, Jackson Arnold, what is his progression? How does he perform this spring? Hugh Freeze has kind of been pretty optimistic about his fit within the offense. We'll get a good view of it this spring. You know, that they have some retooling to do as well on defense, but it feels like all of the talent is there for this team to take a step forward. So I think coming out of spring, we'll know a little bit better of, is Auburn really going to be a top 25 team this year, or are we looking at a team that may struggle to get to seven wins, get back to a bowl game this year?
Yeah, and they're at an interesting point of this coaching tenure, obviously. I mean, it's hard not to see a hot seat list and not have old Hugh on it, but the point being, Steven, that they played a ton of young guys the last 2 years. Last year specifically at receiver and all over the defensive side of the football. So you got those guys some reps. Some of those guys took some lumps, and then by the end of the season we're playing better football. Can you carry that over, if you can, to a lot of true sophomores and true juniors having a huge impact? Who knows? Auburn could be one of the biggest sleepers in the conference, or they go 5-7 again and everybody gets fired. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I believe either one, really.
It feels like Oklahoma and Auburn are the two most volatile teams in the conference next year. Or, you know, as we're talking, they're probably two of the harder teams to figure out. But I think by year three, with how well Auburn has recruited, and Hugh has made a ton of coaching changes, they're all his guys, he's brought in a quarterback he feels good about, they've got the talent, it has to happen now, or it may not happen. They could go through the cycle and get better this year and bring in more talent, but by year three, I think you got to start showing some progress, or that proof of concept that I think we talk about when a new coach takes over, that starts to dwindle away.
Yeah, and one thing, I don't know if we've talked about this, Stephen, but let's just say, I don't think this would be crazy, and I'm going to throw up Alabama's schedule here. Let's say Alabama misses the college football playoff again, 2 years in a row, which again, I'm not predicting, but you know, tough road games at Florida State to open, at Georgia, maybe the number one team in the country, at Mizzou, who their fans expect to win 10 games now every year, at South Carolina, and we haven't even got to the home games. Wisconsin, Vanderbilt beat you last year. Tennessee beat you. Oklahoma beat you. And LSU, on and on and on. But the point being, this is a difficult schedule, right? So let's say, even if they go 9-3, let's say Alabama misses the college football playoff. If you're the Auburn coach and Alabama, which their standard is to make the 4-team playoff, they just missed the 12-team 2 years in a row. And if you're Auburn and you're still not that good, you know, you're hovering around 500, how many people are going to start to say, man, this was a window to possibly jump Alabama, and yet we can't do it. So is it possible that, struggles at Alabama in a weird way hurt Hugh Freeze in Auburn if they don't capitalize on this moment?
That's a great point. You know, I had not thought about that. But I think there's got to be some truth in that, because the greatest coach in college football retired. And, you know, they missed a bowl game last year. If they only get 6-7 wins this year. And again, it's year three, also transfer portal era, where you can reload and turn around a roster quicker. If Auburn is sitting here going 6-6 or 5-7, it is absolutely a missed opportunity for that team and that program.
Yeah. Well, and then all that spieling. I had Auburn number four too, so we've got to hit that extensively. Who would be? How many teams did you do here?
I did six. Yeah,
of course.
I had to do one more.
So who's your number five then?
I did Kentucky at five. This is a team with just so many unknowns. Under 50% returning production on both sides of the ball. There's the class of transfers. There's the coaching questions. how does this team all fit together this year? And I think in what is an important year for Mark Stoops at Kentucky. So just so many unknowns, who exits spring as the starter at quarterback? How are these transfers looking? So Kentucky very much on my list of teams I'm struggling to get a read on right now.
Yeah, perfect. That this is my number five as well, Steven. So Kentucky, they have opened spring already. And one interesting thing that, this is the approach they're taking. And it may be, I don't know, who knows? This may be the right approach. I think it kind of has to be because, again, I'll throw up Mark Stoops here. You know, obviously everybody knows rough last year, 4-8. That's coming off 7-6 the 2 years prior. This program has clearly stalled. So what are they doing, Steven, this year? They've got an old roster, essentially, a veteran roster filled with guys like Zach Calzada, who this will be his third SEC school, and that just, overlooks Incarnate Word's in there, too. Guys like Josh Braun, who did a really good job at Arkansas, but before he was at Arkansas, he was at Florida. so another third SEC school type guy. Their roster is loaded with these guys, Stephen, of guys that have just been all over the college football map. So it's a very veteran roster, and the reason I like that doesn't mean Kentucky's going to be any good this year or improved, but if you're going into a make-or-break year, I think you want a veteran, older roster than an up-and-coming that's going to make a lot of mistakes. Does that make sense?
It does, because I don't think you have time to wait if you're Kentucky. I don't think you can bank on a three-year turnaround plan. So go get guys who can play right now and have already been effective in doing so. Also, I think when I look at their transfer class, I like the fact they've got like 9 or 10 guys at the line of scrimmage. Calzada is probably the most interesting transfer of the bunch, but they lose a lot along the line of scrimmage and went out and got some guys. And especially in the SEC, you got to have experience, you got to have talent, and you got to have depth. Whether or not they can all play at this level, that'll be the big question. But I like what they did in the portal.
As Jeez Louise calls them all journeymen, which that may be fair. But again, we gotta look optimistically somehow at that situation. But all right, so you got one more. Steven's an overachiever, in case you guys have not figured this out yet. Who's your final team that you're putting on this pedestal?
I'm going with Missouri at 6. It's for a lot of reasons that you mentioned there. It's just seeing how Bo Prabula develops is probably one of my top like 10 national storylines, the quarterback situation. It's just an interesting team with how many stars are gone, the running backs, Luther Burden, some offensive line turnover. So a team that's been very successful the last 2 years has a lot of turnover this year on offense, and how fast they can fill those voids will determine whether or not they end up being another double digit win season.
Now, I'm putting words in your mouth here, Steven. So again, let's be clear. This is not what Steven's predicting or projecting or anything like that. Let's say old Bo is, and I don't even know how you really quantify this, but let's say we're about to do all SEC, Steven. Let's say Bo is like borderline all SEC, and that can mean literally anything you want it to mean. If he is of that caliber, what is the projected win total for Missouri this year?
I would probably put it at double digits again. I think that's like 10 wins. I think that's fair. Would you agree with that?
I might go higher.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's otherworldly, and again, I have no indication that he is, and I'm not saying he's a bad player. I think he is just on what little I've seen. He's clearly athletic and he's looking for his opportunity, and Missouri saw something in him. Now he didn't get it at Penn State, but depending on who you ask, Penn State maybe they have the best quarterback in the country. I don't know. I don't think Drew Aller is that well regarded, but I think he'll certainly be preseason all Big Ten. Steven can correct me if I'm wrong, but
yeah, he will be. It's not a great year right now for quarterbacks in the Big Ten. He's by far the most proven. Yeah.
Okay. So for sure. I mean, so this is a guy that literally could not get on the field because of maybe the best quarterback in that conference. So, Joe Burrow couldn't get on the field either. And again, I'm not saying Bo is Joe Burrow, but Joe Burrow couldn't get it on the field either. So sometimes these guys just need an opportunity. And I don't know, this, this will be fascinating to see.
Yeah, it really will. And also in the backdrop of it, like I said earlier, I love what they did in the transfer portal because they went out and got an experienced running back. They got Kevin Coleman from Mississippi State. Like, they have two plug and play guys where they're losing impact skill talent. And you have Kirby Moore and you have Eli Drinkwitz, two guys that I think you should trust to figure things out offensively. So if Prabula hits as well as, you know, whether it's all SEC or, you know, just being a fringe all SEC player, I said it earlier, but Mike, their schedule is so favorable that you can talk yourself into a path to the college football playoff. Even if this team maybe isn't as good as an LSU and Alabama, Tennessee this season.
I hope the Mizzou fans heard that. Steven says, go out, buy your playoff tickets, Mizzou. All right, let's get into all SEC teams for 2025. Maybe quickly you could explain it, your thought process. And because here's what I did, Steven. I went to the official SEC, all SEC ballot, the coaches one. And I formatted it like them. I mean, it's silly that they only do two receivers, but I did two receivers, you know, one quarterback, two running backs, on and on. So that's my list. Do you have any thoughts before you reveal yours?
I did three receivers. I did five linebackers, three safeties. I just make the rules up as I go.
Okay. So let's get on with it. Quarterback, based on your infamous rankings, you had Arch Manning number one. I assume Arch Manning is your quarterback. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He is. Everybody agreed with it, so I see no reason to change it.
Get that garbage out of here.
Easy pick for me, Mike. I think Garrett Nussmeier was a pretty close second, but I'm sticking with my Arch Manning prediction.
Excuse me, I'm choking on my own rage over here. I didn't even have there's only one quarterback because that's the way the SEC does the balloting. It's not my rules. Apparently it's not Steven's rules either. But so we could only pick one. I didn't pick either one of those guys, Steven. I didn't pick Arch. I didn't pick Nussmeier. Two worthy candidates. Nussmeier, certainly, I think, much worthier than Arch Manning, who's proven little to nothing to me at this point. I went with DJ Lagway. Come on down. I'm fascinated by these debates, Steven, with and I don't know why it's DJ Lagway, Lenore Sellers, so hyper-focused, but I saw that coming from a million miles away, and it's already starting to heat up. I'm seeing it online. Doesn't mean Lenore is a bad player. I'm just going with the one I'm most confident in, and it would be DJ Lagway, who, again, we've not even seen him for a ton of action, but I'm enamored with the guy. I realize Billy Napier's his coach. That's not helping his case. But I think he's such a dynamic player that he can overcome Billy Napier. Thoughts on DJ Lagway as my all-SEC quarterback?
I think Lagway and Sellers are in that tier one conversation for me. Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier. So no complaints here. I do think he is very much going to take that big step forward this year. And we saw that at the end of last season. Also, I love the fact they're getting Eugene Wilson back or healthy. You know, kind of flies under the radar that they are losing some guys at receiver, but they're getting him back. So it's going to be an interesting year for quarterbacks in the SEC. I think it's stacked in any of these four. It's early, but I think any of these four, I think, make a very solid preseason number one at quarterback.
Yeah, like you said, an absolutely loaded year, I think, for the quarterback position. I can't wait for it. All right, running backs. Steven, give us your list of eight. You probably did.
I listed six because I picked two, but I listed six.
Okay.
But, you know, was this the hardest position for you to find a player so far?
Yeah, I'm about to reveal it, but I took a swing with one of them, and hopefully you don't laugh me off here.
I took Nate Frazier from Georgia as one of them. And, okay, you know, I'm projecting ahead a little bit here, obviously, projecting a bigger role. Mm-hmm. Also, I wrote down insert Texas running back starter. I guess it's Trey Wisner because CJ Baxter coming back from injury. So yeah, I feel it's very, very much wide open here. I think it seems like you agree with that.
I do not. Now I certainly considered him, but the reason I didn't do it, just like you said, I mean, it could be any number of guys. Sark likes to keep those guys fresh. You know, I think he does a masterful job of rotating. And even at receiver, it's like one game it's this guy, one game it's that guy. I think that's part of his design where you don't know who to guard, and it's, there's genius in that. So give me Le'Veon Moss, A&M. You know, he was a tank before he got, I think it was the South Carolina game, he got hurt, and they were never the same. And the fact that A&M's bringing back virtually everybody on the offensive line, year two of the system, year two of the quarterback. I don't have a ton of confidence in the passing game at this point in time, given the turnover at receivers and everything like that. But I think A&M could be a running machine, so give me Moss there. And then here's where I took a big swing. And you let me know if I'm off my rocker, which I probably am. Give me Jaden Baugh, Florida. True freshman last year. I thought, he was really flashing at the end of the season. And, you know, I'm trying to project ahead here. I don't want to just look at, you know, last year's stat leaders or anything like that. I'm saying by the end of next year, I think Jaden Baugh could be one of the best one or two running backs in the conference.
That is a great call, Mike. I had him on my list for second team. And if you look at Billy Napier's track record as a head coach, they always have good running backs, a good running game. Somebody is going to produce. With Montrell Johnson gone, I would pencil in Jaden Baugh as probably the go-to guy right now. I also considered, you know, I mentioned him earlier, Ahmad Hardy from Missouri, just the transfer opportunity. Also, I am curious about the A&M backfield because Reuben Owens coming back. You throw Moss in there, Amari Daniels. You throw Marcel Reed's rushing ability. They could just, with the offensive line, this team could be a smash-mouth offensive team. So very much interested to see how some of these carries break down. It is a hard position to sort out.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun. All right, receiver. Steven, let us know your 12 receivers you selected here.
I got three names for you, Mike. I think two of these are pretty obvious. I've got Cam Coleman from Auburn. I've got Ryan Williams at Alabama. And I took Eugene Wilson at Florida, kind of piggybacking your DJ Lagway selection. I think Wilson, injuries cut short last year. I think he rebounds this year. I'll stop there because I have a few sleepers I'll throw out. I don't want to ruin your selections there, Mike.
Well, you already got mine. I mean, I think these are fairly obvious. Some people would disagree, I guess. Ryan Williams, I think he's got to be a slam dunk. I had him first. Although he did kind of trail off a little bit, but he's got his nail paint. He's got his NIL and all that, so he's got to produce this year. I think maybe he just hit that freshman wall, and of course we know the quarterback situation was less than ideal for them. So I'm factoring that in there. And then number two, again, a little bit of a projection, but not really because he's already showcased his talent and really started to come on. But I'm going Cam Coleman, Auburn. So possibly the two best receivers in the SEC hail from the same state in the SEC next season.
What about, did you consider Ryan Wingo from Texas at all?
Yeah, he's another one. I mean, massively talented. He flashed but as a true freshman as well. Certainly looks like he could be that next great Texas receiver. I wouldn't harsh or be too harsh if you swapped. I wouldn't swap Ryan Williams for him, but maybe Cam Coleman.
I could also see him over Eugene Wilson. Also, I think Deion Burks is going to rebound too. I mean, he was one of the better transfers into the SEC last season before he got hurt. And now with a much more stable quarterback, OC, better offensive line, I think he's going to rebound this year. So he might be someone who gets kind of lost in the shuffle this preseason, but I think he should at least be like second, third team this preseason.
I'll tell you one thing I don't like about Deion Burks, and maybe this will change your mind. And maybe this is just old man yelling at the sky or whatever, which just let me know if that's the case. I could take criticism as well. Because I've seen Deion Burks in limited action. Looks incredible early in the season. Looked like he was going to be a big game breaker for Oklahoma. And I hope he is this season. I'm sure they paid him a lot and they didn't get their money's worth necessarily last year, but probably that's not his fault. He got injured, right? But one thing I didn't like And it's, again, it's not even necessarily him. It's kind of the game. And maybe I'm just mad at the game right now. But, you know, there was a whole, is he going to play in a bowl game? And is he going to return? And it was like, he literally said, you know, I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to play in a bowl game. I'm trying to figure out if I'm coming back to Oklahoma. And obviously he is back and he made the decision. But in my mind, Stephen, if you're deciding that, I mean, I don't know what that means. Clearly, I think that means money and all that, which, again, I'm all for the players getting paid. But if you're haggling whether you're going to play, I kind of feel like you do not have what it takes to be an elite player in college football at this level, in this conference. That's just how I feel. I could be totally wrong.
They could have used him in the bowl game against Navy. That is for sure. Right. So. But I mean, Mike, to your point, I do think that's sort of the game now, isn't it? I mean, players are already entering the portal this spring, and it's like, is that leverage play? Is that real? So, yeah, it's interesting times in the sport.
Yes. And the reverse, again, it's not all the guys, right? Clark Lee also, I referenced that. Go check it out if you got The Athletic. Joe Rex wrote, I think is his name, wrote an article. And in there it said, Diego Pavia was dealing with significant injuries last year that would have held out a lot of players, but he played through it. So not everyone's like that. You know what I mean? So I that just adds to the Diego hype. But all right, so let's do tight end, Stephen. Who you got as a tight end there?
Speaking of Vanderbilt, how about Eli Stowers? former quarterback, thrived at tight end last year for Vanderbilt. One of the top weapons for Diego Pavia. So he is my very early preseason pick to be first team all SEC.
Yeah, I think you nailed this one. That's exactly where I went. He's just so critical to the whole operation there at Vanderbilt, coming over from New Mexico State with Pavia and company. So, I'm wildly impressed with Stowers, who maybe should have been an Aggie. I don't know. He was for a minute there, but, give me Stowers. I like that one.
Did you consider any other tight ends there other than Stowers?
I mean, not really. I know Miles Kitzelman's back. He's been fairly productive. I thought Luke Hawes, perhaps, because I love the way that Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss, they utilized the tight end position coming over from Arkansas. Let's hope Luke Hawes can stay healthy, because that's been an issue. But those were kind of the guys. Is there anyone else out there?
Oscar Delp, maybe at Georgia. I could see, you know, reinforcements coming at receiver. What does that mean for the tight ends? Obviously is a question, but it feels like Delp has a lot of talent. Stockton could, his progression obviously plays into that, guess for him. But I thought Sowers was pretty easy, first team pick for me, with maybe Haas at second right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about offensive line, Stephen? And just to let everybody know, I think they already know just by listening to me speak and watch his show. I may not be qualified, so this is a tough one for me, offensive line, but what's your thoughts on him?
Totally agree. Thank goodness for some advanced metrics to help us with some of these selections. at center, I got Jake Slaughter from Florida. I think he might be the best center in college football coming back next year. As for the other four offensive linemen, I cheated a little bit. I got to put Parker Brailsford in there as an offensive lineman. Technically, he's a center. I also have Caden Proctor from Alabama, Caden Green from Missouri, and Reed Adams from Texas A&M. Got to get one of those Aggies offensive linemen on there, because this will be one of the best offensive lines in the conference next year.
A lot of the same selections. What about Trey Zune, A&M? Could we get two Aggies on this list? I think he deserves a spot on this list. As Jake Slaughter, I certainly had. Caden Proctor, I had. How about that? Now, this is me taking a wild swing here. This is about continuity. He didn't perform like all SEC, but he's better this year, and he's getting paid like it, and he's the only returning offensive lineman. Give me Lance Hurd at Tennessee. It's time. You know, year two, maybe he takes his game up to that next level. Again, this is more of a projection and hope and more than anything, but he's certainly got the talent, I think, to be on this list.
I like that call because it always feels like there are offensive linemen who are supremely talented, who put it together after a rough year. He might be one of them. Also, I would throw out Ernest Green from Georgia. Injuries, maybe a little bit up and down, sort of the leader of this offensive line now. Also, Josiah Thompson at South Carolina, another supremely talented offensive lineman who feels like he's going to figure it out and get better. So this feels like a pretty solid group of offensive linemen returning for 2025.
And then did you have an all-purpose back?
I did. I went with Kevin Concepcion of Texas A&M, a Ooh. Transfer. I think his ability to rush, you can put him on returns. He can catch the short stuff, turn it into a long gain. I think he fits well for the Aggies offense. So give me Kevin Concepcion.
And this may be cheating. I just basically use it as a second running back, but give me Caden Durham, LSU. I thought this could be the finally. It's been a while since LSU's had a really good running back, maybe since Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he could be the next great LSU running back. He flashed certainly as a true freshman last year, and with the receivers they've added, with obviously Garrett Nussmeier, I think Nussmeier is going to put him in position to be successful time and time again in running into light boxes potentially. And if they're not, then they're just going to throw on him. So I think Caden Durham's going to have a huge year for LSU.
I like that call because he was one of my 800 running backs that I listed here. let me ask you, Mike, what do you think about LSU's, the rumblings they may use Juwan Johnson, some at quarterback, as a two, sort of like a special package of plays to get some extra pop in the run game?
I think it's smart because, obviously you want to limit how many hits Garrett Nussmeier is going to take and you don't sit him necessarily because you want to go option or a speed option or anything like that. But I've said it before. I'll forever say it until proven otherwise. I want a quarterback that can run and not just run, but be a weapon back there. And that may not be Garrett Nussmeier's game. And, you know, they should, if they're wise, they'll adapt to it because he may be the best passer, best, you know, quarterback readiness, mind, whatever you want, awareness, you know, it may be off the charts. But at the end of the day, if it's Nussmeier versus like a Sellers, like a DJ Lagway, give me the other guy because I just think that adds such a dimension to the game. And the fact that LSU is sitting here saying, well, maybe we rotate in another guy who can be a little bit more dynamic, maybe in the red zone and short yardage. Again, that's that kind of speaks to exactly what I'm saying. Because if Garrett Nussmeier, he's I don't know if he still is, but he was the leading vote getter for the Heisman early. So if he's that guy, and we're rotating someone else for sub packages, it tells you LSU feels like there's a small piece of the offense that's maybe not being utilized.
I think you were one of the few people who pointed this out last year, was the loss of Jaden Daniels, that the impact it would have on the run game. And you saw this, like LSU was last in the SEC in rushing offense. They were also closer to the bottom of the SEC in touchdown percentage inside the red zone. So, I mean, anything you can get to go from just 16th, if it's the 10th, a little bit better scoring touchdowns in the red zone. I think back to the USC game in the first, you know, game of the season and some of the short yardage red zone things. I would be using everything at my disposal if I'm LSU. So I like that idea. Plus the development of Caden Durham seems like that's going to help get this running game on track.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's switch over to the defensive side of the football, Stevie. Defensive lineman. Hopefully you didn't do 20 here. Who's your defensive line?
I did four, so I stayed within the rules this time. Probably the one position that I did. I've got Dylan Stewart, no-brainer. I've got LT Overton from Alabama, Colin Simmons of Texas. I think you could fair to say he had a breakout year last year. If he didn't this year, I think he will. And I got to get R. Mason Thomas on there from Oklahoma. I didn't think he got enough love last year. Hopefully he'll get that this year in the preseason.
Yeah, interesting. So we almost had the same exact list. I threw Caleb Banks on there, Florida, over Colin Simmons. because just to piss off the Texas people, really. But no, I think all these guys are great, and I wanted to put Simmons on there, but I think Florida's defense took major strides, particularly in that second half of the season. So I think they're a little bit underrated. Give me Caleb Banks on this one.
Yeah, I like that call. He was one of the 800 other second team selections that I considered. I had Keldrick Falk. Also thought about Chris McClellan from Missouri. If you're looking for a breakout candidate, I think James Smith of Alabama is a good one, especially after he played well in the bowl game against Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And Tennessee may have a guy or two by the end of the season that ranks up there too with Coach Gardner. I mean, they've got a D-line factory going right now.
Absolutely. That is one of the harder kind of teams to figure out right now in defense with Tennessee, with McCoy being hurt, Ricky Gibson entered the portal. You've got a lot of turnover. It's almost like the Texas running back thing, like I mentioned. You expect a Tennessee defensive lineman to be there at the end of the year. The question is which one.
Right. All right. How about linebacker? How many of these guys are you going with?
I got about 20, but I'll give you five. I did pick five, so I will try to keep this short so I don't annoy Mike any more than I already am. I've got Whit Weeks of LSU, Anthony Hill of Texas, Suntarine Perkins of Ole Miss, CJ Allen of Georgia, and Torian York of A&M.
Yeah, I mean, you just nailed my top three is the same as your top three. I certainly considered York. I think not that he deserves to be on this list, but I think could get there by the end of the year. Maybe as Arian Carter for Tennessee. He's really starting to come on for Tennessee, obviously. But these are some outstanding linebackers here that we got in the SEC. So a really good group.
Also, Deontay Lawson, if he comes back healthy, I think we'll make a run at this. Kip Lewis over at Oklahoma, some heroics last year. Throw maybe Langston Patterson in at Vanderbilt too.
The Kip Six is going to go down in infamy there. I believe that was Oklahoma's first SEC win. Man, what a way to earn it. You know what?
Also, probably should mention Harold Perkins here too. I know he's going to play the star for LSU, if that's safety or linebacker or defensive hybrid. But if he comes back healthy and they can capitalize and utilize his talent, he's probably going to be right here first, second team all SEC at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about defensive backs?
I've got three corners and three safeties because we got to be good at defending the pass here. So at corner, I will go with Jermaud McCoy. Obviously, the injury is a big deal, but he's one of the top returning cornerbacks in college football. Malik Muhammad at Texas and Dalen Everett from Georgia are my three corners. At safety, I've got KJ Bolden, I've got Michael Taff of Texas, and I've got Bray Hubbard of Alabama. Felt like cornerback or safety was a little bit better than corner. Would you agree with that right now?
Yeah, I think so too. Did you consider one guy I got on my list here is Isaac Smith, Mississippi State. I know their defense was not fantastic, but he was a standout for the Bulldogs last season.
Absolutely. What do you have? But 127 tackles for that defense. Yeah, he would definitely be on my short list. You could throw out Keon Saab too at Alabama. I also thought maybe you're curious how you feel about this guy. I thought Randon Fontanette from Vanderbilt was very underrated during the season. I thought his sort of ability to play the safety hybrid defender for Vanderbilt was pretty key to some of that turnaround. Would you agree with that? Or is that crazy talk for me?
I think you make a good, excellent point there. Again, to the defensive statistics you threw out earlier at the beginning of the episode, that the strides they made on a defensive side of the football, they're another one that they're bringing back dang near everybody on the defensive side of the football. Let me throw it at you. Well, 75%. I mean, that leads the SEC. So yeah, Fontenot being an anchor back here could be a really big breakout season nationally for him and for this Commodore defense.
Also, credit to Clark Lee for like really good talent evaluation to get him in and make him kind of that cornerstone of that defense on the back end. So a lot of returning personnel and defense plus Pavia, a lot of reasons to be optimistic if you're Vanderbilt next year.
Yeah, they've quite honestly, Stephen, they've identified a lot of talent. They just lost it all via the portal a year ago. So
yeah,
imagine where they'd be. Hey, apologies. Babe, I didn't hear you. Maybe you did you omit this guy or maybe I just missed it. Did you mention Will Lee from Texas A&M?
I had him on my second team. I debated Lee and Everett for that last third corner spot.
Anyone with a nickname gets on my list. True. Here. So give me the blanket down there. Shout out Eli Drinkwitz and company with their fake blankets. You know what?
That and Talon Green.
How could you not want that guy on a Hard Knocks? Come on. You know what?
I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking about the Hard Knocks stuff. And I think Lane Kiffin would probably be the one coach that would be the most interesting. Mm-hmm. But Drinkwitz has got to be second, right? I mean, maybe he's number one for some people in this just because of some of the things, you know, we're talking about here.
Oh, I think Drake would ham it up for the cameras. Whereas Lane Kiffin, honestly, that's not his personality. He's more of a keyboard warrior. You know what I mean? So he might actually suck in camera. I don't know. But give me Drink when it comes to, you know, a personality in front of a camera. I think he'd be excellent.
Also, it goes to one of the reasons why I picked Vanderbilt is like, what a great exposure that would be for Missouri. And what a great opportunity for Eli Drinkwitz to use that as a platform, of course, for more antics or more program promotion for a team that's been one of the best in the SEC the last 2 years.
Yeah. All right. Hey, last thing. Did you do any special teams, kicker, punter, returner, anything like that?
I did. I'll throw out my selections, and I only picked one for each position this time, so I followed the rules. Peyton Woodring at kicker. I got Brett Thorson from Georgia at punter, so both Georgia for kicker and punter. At kick returner, I've got Barry and Brown from LSU, and I have Martell Height from Vanderbilt at punt returner.
Mm, yeah, those are standout names for sure. What about, did you consider Xavier Thomas at all for returning kicks or, excuse me, punts?
Yeah, I did. That's a good call. I could probably have him over Height, I think.
But it's hard not to have Barry and Brown.
Yeah.
All-time SEC kick return touchdown leader, right? So, man, LSU should have one heck of a dynamic return game. And Georgia, as if they needed any help, may have the best special teams in the conference next year.
Yes. It's. I was trying to think of how many times a kicker and punter from the same team has been first team like that in the preseason. It's not very often. So, I mean, like you said, as if Georgia needs any advantages going into this year, LSU also is one of the best kick returners and should be probably first team All-America in Barry and Brown.
All right. Hey, well, Stephen, we went well over an hour. Anything else that you want to get off your chest before we jump off the line?
Mike, I'm just glad to see some spring practice starting up. You mentioned it earlier. We had like the fall spring here and it's getting a little bit warmer outside. So that's always nice. So, man, I'm just looking forward to some spring ball, some updates, see what the freshmen, see what the transfers look like. And we're inching ever so closely to Athlon Sports College Football Magazine, then the start of the season. So it's don't want to go too fast, but it's we're counting down the days.
Yeah, we're all going to be, this is the time of the year, Stephen, we're all overreacting to video footage that is curated, edited, produced, and sent out via school, you know, official media teams. So, I mean, that I don't know if this has ever been done. I'm sure it has. But, you know, if I, there's got to be some espionage here. You know what I mean? Like, let's say you're Missouri, and you want everybody to think, you know, this Bo, he's garbage. He, you know, they're not going to throw out videos of him, you know, looking like the Ohio State quarterback at the combine, who was just awful. But basically, I if I'm Mizzou, I don't want anyone to know what Bo can do, what can he do. That's the point I'm trying to make as I ramble here, that you don't let any of that footage out. Maybe you just let out all his mistakes and people are like, oh God, this guy can't play. We wasted $1.5 million. And then he's the next Tim Tebow and he shocks the SEC next season. So, yeah, maybe we don't overreact, but I know way better. Me and the cousins, we're going to overreact to every clip we get our hands on this spring.
There's going to be several clips where you could see an interception and you don't know who threw it. There's also several clips that I've noticed this over the last couple of years where the first team offense is on the field, but the camera zooms in really tight so that you can't see the starting 11 for the team, or the same thing for defense. So coaching paranoia at a very all-time high in the spring, summer, and fall practice before we get to the season.
Right. It's kind of like, who was it last? Was it Colorado that I don't even know if they did it, but it went viral that they were editing Shador passes,
yes,
that looked like interceptions, turned them into touchdowns. Again, I don't even know that actually happened, but the fact that that got out, that's what I choose to believe. You know what?
I mean, admittedly, I'm so starved for college football. I'm probably going to be clicking on all of those videos and reminding myself, don't read everything into this clip, but it's still pretty awesome to see Keelan Russell throwing footballs or see Bo Prabula, Zach Calzada. I'm just hungry for some college football right now.
Oh, last thing, Steven, you just sparked something in me, and this could be completely meaningless, and maybe it is, but I did see, and again, who knows how accurate this even is, but Keelan Russell, apparently he was listed at like 175 or something like that, and then Alabama put out the rosters, and he's up to like 194, which again, we don't know if these are even actual figures, but if he's gained 20-something pounds since signing with Alabama to camp, I mean, are we already getting the hype train, or is it, what's your thoughts on that?
Ah, I saw the pass thrown today. It was gorgeous. So it must mean he's headed for first team all SEC honors this year. Forget Arch Manning, get Keelan Russell in here. Mike, I think he's a pretty serious contender for the starting job. I mean, I know it's like, it might be Captain Obvious by saying that, but you know, you're Kalen DeBoer and you need something. I mean, obviously winning 9 games, good. It's not the standard, but you could build around a Keelan Russell for a couple years and have a lot of optimism, but also, you don't play him, he could hit the transfer portal. So right. I think there's a pretty good chance that he starts at some point this year.
You don't use it, you don't lose. You could lose it. All right. So, right. Steven, before you go, tell people where to follow you, how to find your work.
Absolutely. You can follow me over on Twitter at AflonSteven, Steven L. CFB over on Facebook and Instagram, and AflonSports.com for all of your college football needs and preseason rankings, predictions, anything you want to see over there.
All right. Thank you so much, Steven, for dropping all this knowledge on us. Thank you, each and every one of you cousins out there, for tuning in. Cousin Shane, he'll be back on the next episode. Until then, we'll catch you on the next.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.